The man known to history as Giuseppe Garibaldi was born as Joseph Marie Garibaldi on the 4th of July 1807 in the town of Nice in what is now part of the French Riviera. Giuseppe's father was Domenico Garibaldi, a merchant who hailed originally from the town of Chiavari near Genoa and who had relocated his family to Nice for business reasons by the time Giuseppe was born. His mother was Maria Rosa Raimondi. She too was of Italian descent, coming from the village of Loano near Genoa. Giuseppe was just one of several children they had. He had three sisters, Maria, Felice and Teresa, and two brothers, Angelo and Michele. Historically, the region in which they lived, now part of the French Riviera, had been a long-standing part of the Kingdom of Sardinia, an Italian state which had ruled the island of Sardinia and also the Piedmont region in the west of the plain of Lombardy in northern Italy and further west into regions like Nice that are in France today. The Garibaldis were of the Ligurian or Genovese region, and Garibaldi always considered himself to be Italian, thus his adoption of Giuseppe, the Italian variant of Joseph, as his name. At the time of his birth, Nice was under the control of the French Empire of Napoleon Bonaparte, though it would soon be returned to Sardinia at the Congress of Vienna in 1814. Giuseppe was born during a turning point in Italian history. For centuries, going well back into the High Middle Ages, Italy had been divided into numerous small states and principalities. The number of these had changed over time. In the late medieval period, there were dozens of small city-states and republics, but some of the smaller ones had been swallowed up by the larger ones during the 16th and 17th centuries. Nevertheless, there had still been well over a dozen Italian states by the time the French Revolutionary Wars broke out in the 1790s. Polities such as the mercantile republics of Venice and Genoa, the Papal State, the Grand Duchy of Tuscany, the Kingdom of Sardinia, and the Kingdom of Naples, as well as smaller duchies such as those of Parma, Modena, and Milan. The conquest of much of Italy by the French in the late 1790s saw many of these states reshaped into different sister republics of France, such as the Cisalpine Republic, and eventually a Kingdom of Italy, ruled by Bonaparte with his stepson, Eugène de Beauharnais, as his viceroy. That dispensation proved short-lived, and when Napoleon's European empire collapsed in 1814, the numerous pre-war small Italian states were brought back into existence. Yet the seed of an idea of a unified Italian nation had been sown, and with the rise of romantic nationalism across Europe in the first half of the 19th century, there would soon be a growing movement for Italian unification. Garibaldi would be one of the central figures in this reunification process, or what has come to be known as the Risorgimento, the resurgence or reorganization. Garibaldi's restless nature was in evidence early on. After a childhood working as both a minor merchant and fisherman in the waters of Nice, eastwards towards Genoa, he left home when he was just 16 years of age. By then, he had obtained a decent education and continued to educate himself over the years, so much so that during his travels between 1824 and 1833, he paid his way partly through work as a mariner and partly as a teacher of various subjects, notably Italian and French, both of which he was entirely fluent in, owing to his birth and upbringing in the borderlands of France and Italy. His travels were extensive during these years. After a time visiting other parts of the Italian peninsula, he spent the better part of 4 years living in Constantinople, the capital of the Ottoman Empire, which is known today as Istanbul. He spent time in Russia in the early 1830s, returning to his native Italy in 1833. This was far from his last extensive period of travel, and later he would venture as far afield as North and South America, Asia and Australia. Back in Italy in 1833, Garibaldi became involved with the Young Italy movement. This had been founded 2 years earlier by Giuseppe Mazzini, a Genovese journalist and political theorist who aimed to unite the disparate Italian principalities and statelets into one unified Italian state. Mazzini, though, was not an armchair philosopher and was committed to putting his thoughts into action through military measures. As such, by the time Garibaldi first met Mazzini in Genoa in the early winter of 1833, the Young Italy movement had already drawn tens of thousands of supporters to it and was plotting an armed insurrection to begin seizing control of the Kingdom of Sardinia and using it as a springboard to wider wars of unification across the Italian peninsula. Much of this was also about overthrowing foreign oppression. While much of Italy was controlled by small Italian states, a large block of the north and southeast of the country was under the rule of Austria, while the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, which had emerged to dominate the island of Sicily and the southern third of the peninsula around Naples, Calabria, and Apulia, was still ruled by a branch of the Spanish Bourbon royal family. Consequently, the Young Italian movement that Garibaldi became involved in 1833 was aimed at both Italian unification and bringing an end to foreign rule over large parts of the country. When Garibaldi joined Mazzini's movement and swore an oath to fight to liberate the country, the Young Italy movement was already in the process of planning action in the Piedmont region. Garibaldi was quickly involved in these efforts and began utilizing his old contacts along the coastal communities between Genoa and Nice to aid it. However, before it could ever be put into operation, the scheme was uncovered by the Sardinian government. Dozens of Mazzini's followers were arrested and placed on trial. Garibaldi was not amongst them. Given forewarning of the arrests, he had fled over the border to the French part of Marseille, and from there he sailed to Tunis in North Africa. He was convicted in absentia in a Sardinian court and sentenced to death. With such a pall hanging over any potential return to his homeland, Garibaldi left the old world altogether and sailed to South America, settling in Brazil in 1834. He would spend the next 14 years of his life in exile from his native Italy. Mazzini too would spend much of his time in exile, though living closer to home in London and other European cities, from where he organized several Young Italy insurrections, none of which had any noticeable impact on the political environment in Italy. Garibaldi arrived in Brazil just as the old country was entering its own period of revolution. This was owing to grievances in the Rio Grande do Sul region in the south of the country, the economy of which was primarily reliant on cattle farming and the provision of foodstuffs to the more northerly provinces. The southerners had long-standing grievances that despite being the breadbasket of Brazil, they had not benefited from the huge Brazilian gold rush of the 18th century, one which was still partially underway in the 1830s. Garibaldi was soon in league with two Brazilian army officers who represented the Rio Grande do Sul region, Bento Gonçalves da Silva and Antonio de Souza Neto. The trio initiated a revolt in 1835, one which has become known as the Ragamuffin War, so named after the fact that many of the rebels had been associated with the Ragamuffin Party of Lieutenant Luis José de Riz Alpoim in the region since its foundation in 1832. The name suited insofar as those who revolted were a disparate group of individuals, some upset about border issues, some about regional issues, some being native groups who were unhappy at their mistreatment by the colonial government, and in Garibaldi's case, being an Italian revolutionary far from home. Launching their revolt in the autumn of 1835, within a few months they were in a position to declare the creation of the Rio Grandense Republic as a separatist state from Brazil. The Ragamuffin War would last for a decade. Garibaldi fought for the Rio Grandense cause through to the late 1830s. Much of Garibaldi's military actions were concentrated on the coast, where, unlike the other military leaders, he had naval experience from his many years at sea. Nevertheless, Garibaldi was a complete novice when it came to warfare. He had never trained as a soldier or naval commander, and in this sense, the Ragamuffin War was his apprenticeship in revolutionary warfare. It would serve him well later in Italy. These were also important years for him on a personal level. Around 1839, he met Anita Maria de Jesus Ribeiro, the daughter of a family of poor immigrants from the Azores Islands, who were one of many to arrive to Brazil as part of the Gold Rush. She had been married in 1836 at just 15 years of age to an army commander, but was abandoned by him shortly afterwards. When they met, Garibaldi was instantly smitten with her. It was more Bonnie and Clyde than Romeo and Juliet. An extant photo of her shows her dressed in a male suit, and it was Anita who taught Giuseppe how to rustle cattle on the Brazilian Pampas. They would have four children together: Menotti, born in 1840, Rosita in 1843, Teresita in 1845, and Ricciotti in 1847. They married in 1842. The birth of their son, Menotti, in 1840 put Giuseppe and Anita in a difficult position. With an infant in tow, they could no longer continue to contribute to the war in Rio Grande do Sul. Accordingly, they left Brazil and headed for neighboring Uruguay, a country which had only come into existence a few years earlier to act as a buffer state between Brazil and Argentina, an arrangement mediated by the British. It was here that the young family moved in 1841, with the couple marrying in Montevideo not long after. Giuseppe found odd work here as both a merchant and as a teacher. This attempt at domestic tranquility did not last long. Uruguay was a country of huge instability in the first half century of its existence, with Blanco and Colorado factions vying for control of the government. In 1839, even before the Garibaldis arrived in the country, a new civil war had broken out. Now though, in 1842, the Colorados, under Fructuoso Rivera, were defeated by the Blancos at the Battle of Arroyo Grande, the latter laying siege to Montevideo at the beginning of 1843. Garibaldi had been trying to avoid conflict for a time, but it had found him before too long. In 1842, Garibaldi had already begun recruiting people of Italian heritage in Uruguay to a brigade of foreign troops he was creating. They would wear a distinctive red shirt uniform, and it is to this time that Garibaldi's iconic look of a loose-fitting red blouse shirt, pants and a red hat with a sword emerged. He and his followers would become synonymous with this attire for the next 3.5 decades. The red shirts soon swelled in numbers as 15% of the population of Montevideo was of Italian heritage at the time. Garibaldi sided with the Colorados, a controversial move in retrospect, as their leader, Rivera, had been involved in a genocidal action against the native Charrua people at the massacre at Salsipuedes back in 1831, though Garibaldi probably had no idea of this in 1842. In any event, his red shirts fought on the side of the Colorados at the Siege of Montevideo. This turned out to be one of the longest sieges in modern warfare, one which would drag on for the better part of a decade. Over the years, he was active in it. Garibaldi's forces managed to play an important role in the naval clashes around the harbor and adjoining regions of the city, actions which involved trying to take small islands in the wider waters as the British, French, Argentines and Brazilians all became involved in naval blockades in what was a conflict of an international nature in the 1840s. Garibaldi wouldn't be in Uruguay to see the end of either the Great Siege of Montevideo or the Uruguayan Civil War. Events in Europe instead convinced him that he should make his way back home in 1848. Earlier that year, revolutions and protest movements spread across much of Europe. One of the broad causes was rising food prices and shortages across Europe, caused to a large degree by the arrival of a potato blight in the continent from America on the new steamships. This wiped out the potato crop in countries like Ireland and Poland, which had become reliant upon it, leading to famine in some instances and general scarcity across the continent in the mid-1840s. On top of this, there was a growing unrest at the intolerable conditions of the burgeoning urban proletariat. The first signs of revolt were in Italy, though it soon spread to Germany, Austria, Hungary, Poland, France, and Ireland, where armed insurrections were seen in some places and open warfare in others. This would have tangible results in some, though not all, countries. For instance, in France, the February Revolution of 1848 led to the overthrow of the July monarchy that had come into being in July 1830, and the establishment of a new Second French Republic. As Garibaldi heard of developments in Europe, he quickly made his way home. In some countries across Europe, the authorities were using extensive military force, combined with limited political concessions, to bring the unrest to an end. But this was not proving possible in parts of Italy, so much so that the events of 1848 and 1849 were known as the First War of Italian Independence. The unrest began on the island of Sicily in January 1848, against the Bourbon monarchy's rule and the grinding poverty of life in southern Italy. Thereafter, insurrections broke out in some of the cities of northern Italy, which were controlled by Austria, notably in Milan and Venice. As the unrest spread, King Charles Albert, the ruler of the Kingdom of Sardinia, decided to go to war with the Austrians, ostensibly in defense of the rights of his fellow Italians, who were revolting against Austrian rule across the plain of Lombardy and east into the Veneto region, though he clearly had a lot of self-interest in play at the same time. Thus, Sardinia emerged here as the primary driving force behind the nascent movement for Italian unification, with the Austrians as the main opposition, though there were other states and interest groups involved. For instance, during the First War of Italian Independence, there was briefly a Roman Republic fighting on the side of Sardinia after Pope Pius IX was temporarily driven out of Rome and a Republican state replaced the Papal State. This latter arrangement didn't last long, and Pope Pius was able to seize control of Rome again and re-establish the Papal State with French military support. When Garibaldi arrived back in Italy, he quickly made an impact by forming a legion of his red shirts in the Piedmont region early in 1849 and winning a number of small though not inconsiderable military engagements against the Austrians in the plains of Lombardy. However, the momentum of the Sardinians and their Italian allies against the Austrians in northern Italy was broken by Austrian victory at the Battle of Novara in late March 1849. With this, Garibaldi heeded the advice of Giuseppe Mazzini, who had also returned to Italy in 1848 from his long exile, to head to Rome to protect the fledgling Roman Republic there against efforts by the Pope and the French to retake the Eternal City. There he led a spirited defense in 1849 against combined attacks not only from the Papal and French forces, but also a growing number of Neapolitan troops and Austrians, the latter of which were being diverted from the plain of Lombardy south to aid in the retaking of Rome. By early July, faced with the fact that the wider conflict was lost and defeat in Rome inevitable, Garibaldi negotiated to surrender Rome if he was allowed to retreat with the remainder of his red shirts towards San Marino. This was accepted, and with this, the First War of Italian Independence can be said to have come to an end in defeat for Sardinia, Garibaldi, Mazzini, and the other Italian nationalists. Though they had made their escape from Rome, Garibaldi and his followers were still in harm's way in central Italy. A defensive retreat was made from there towards the plain of Lombardy, with the goal of finding safety once again in the Piedmont and Liguria territories of the Kingdom of Sardinia. However, tragedy struck on the 4th of August near the city of Ravenna during this retreat, when Anita, who was with Garibaldi and carrying their fifth child, died from malaria, which she had most likely contracted in Rome. Though she died in Giuseppe's arms, she had to be buried hastily as they made their escape. Years later, when Italy was unified in a second independence war, Garibaldi would ride into combat with her scarf draped over his horse. Once back in Sardinian territory, there was no reprieve. King Charles Albert had abdicated in favor of his son following the defeat to Austria in the spring, and the new monarch, King Victor Emmanuel II, informed Garibaldi that he could not remain in Sardinia under the circumstances, as his presence there would be objected to by the Austrians and others. Thus it was that, having lost the war and his wife, Garibaldi set sail as an exile once again, heading first for the city of Tangiers in Morocco, and then onwards to New York City. He was not alone in this fresh exile, and many others also left Italy, notably Mazzini, who crossed over the border into France and then into the Swiss Confederacy, where he continued to try to organize insurrections within Italy during the 1850s. Garibaldi spent 3.5 years as a resident of New York, though, as we'll see, he undertook an epic voyage into the Pacific during those years. Having arrived there in the summer of 1850, he settled on Staten Island, where he was offered a job in a candle-making shop by the Italian inventor Antonio Meucci. Hailing originally from Florence, Meucci had settled in Havana in Cuba in the mid-1830s, but relocated to New York just a few months before Garibaldi arrived. Meucci is most famous today for having effectively invented the telephone in the early 1870s, a half a decade before Alexander Graham Bell. However, Meucci failed to incorporate electric current into his device and also didn't take out a sufficient patent to claim full credit for his invention. Back in 1850, he gave Garibaldi a source of income for a few months when he badly needed it. The red shirt leader was suffering from rheumatism when he arrived in New York and was still grieving for his wife. He had an international reputation by that time and could have played up to it within the growing Italian diaspora community within New York, but decided to keep a low profile instead. It was a curious time in New York in this respect. In late 1851, Lajos Kossuth, the leader of the revolution in Hungary in 1848 and 1849, also arrived in the American city. In contrast to Garibaldi's inconspicuous residence, Kossuth was given a parade on Broadway and subsequently headed to Washington to meet President Millard Fillmore. By the time Kossuth arrived in New York, Garibaldi was on an extended trip away from the city. Once his health improved in 1851, he decided candle-making was too tame for his spirit, and so in April that year, he set out on a voyage on a ship called the Carmen on what would turn out to be a year-and-a-half-long trip. Returning to his roots, Garibaldi was on a trading mission, though he also wanted to connect with several figures who had been involved in revolutionary movements against the Spanish in Central and South America. His voyage brought him to many ports in Central America, before sailing around Cape Horn and back north to Peru. From there, in early 1852, he struck out across the Pacific Ocean to the city of Canton, one of the major entry points for Western trade into China. The Carmen then sailed onwards to Manila in the Philippines, and further south to sail along the coast of Australia. With a landing to trade near Tasmania, Garibaldi had now visited all 5 continents in an age when that was a rare accomplishment, and rarer still for someone who had fought in revolutionary wars in 3 different countries on 2 different continents, all by his mid-40s. This achieved, the Carmen set sail back for Chile. There, the goods acquired in the Far East and Australia were sold off for copper, the perennial staple of the Chilean economy, before sailing once again for the United States. A brief stopover in Boston completed the epic voyage before Garibaldi finally returned to New York. There, he took up residence again on Staten Island, but it was only to be a brief stay. During his odyssey, he had decided to return to Italy, and so in January 1854, he set sail as captain of a ship called the Commonwealth, bound for Europe. A statue in Washington Square Park in Manhattan commemorates the time he spent living in New York, while the Gothic Revival cottage on Staten Island, which was theoretically his residence between 1851 and 1853, is preserved in the Rosebank District to this present day. The Commonwealth visited England as part of its trading activities after crossing the Atlantic and before heading to the Mediterranean. A week-long stay at Newcastle was widely reported in the British newspapers, and Garibaldi's popularity amongst the working class of one of the coal-producing engines of the Industrial Revolution was evident. Thereafter, home beckoned. Garibaldi called at his hometown of Nice for a brief reunion with the people there, before heading to his spiritual home at Genoa. He was there by May 1854, but didn't remain there for long. Garibaldi had inherited some money following the death of his brother, which he used to purchase a large estate on the island of Caprera in 1855. This is a 15-kilometer square island lying just off the northeast coast of the island of Sardinia, within the Maddalena archipelago. Here Garibaldi was comfortable in terms of being close to the sea, where he had lived virtually all of his life. But he settled down as a farmer of sorts, developing a plantation of pinewood trees as a cash crop. He also began raising chickens and other farmyard animals. He had a number of donkeys there, which he named after his political enemies, christening the most difficult of them after Pope Pius IX, the figure who had overseen the alliance that defeated him at the Siege of Rome back in 1849. While Garibaldi was in semi-retirement on Caprera, diplomatic efforts were underway to initiate what would be the most significant of the three Italian wars of independence. Ironically, this would come about owing to political realignments in the countries which had opposed Sardinia back in 1849. In the summer of 1858, the Plombier Agreement was reached between the Chief Minister of Sardinia, the Count of Cavour, and Emperor Napoleon III of France. This secretive, verbal agreement committed France to entering the conflict alongside Sardinia, should it declare war on Austria. In return for French aid, the Sardinians would cede the Duchy of Savoy and the County of Nice to France, after victory was won against the Austrians. With this military alliance in place, the Sardinians began mobilizing. Austria was not oblivious to this, and after its own military preparations were initiated, it delivered an ultimatum to the Sardinian government in Turin, demanding removal of its troops from the borders. This was refused, and in late April 1859, the Second War of Italian Independence was entered into. Garibaldi was back on the mainland long before the declaration of war and was appointed as a major general. He did not take charge of a detachment of the official Sardinian army, though. Instead, he began recruiting his own detachment of volunteers known as the Hunters of the Alps. Tens of thousands would fight with the Hunters in the conflicts that followed to unify Italy. The Second Italian War of Independence was in line with other conflicts of the mid-19th century, in that it was a short affair, one that was over after 11 weeks. The Austrians took the initiative and marched into the plain of Lombardy in late April. This provoked the French declaration of war on Austria, and the different forces began marching towards one another. While the major clash between the Franco-Sardinian forces and the Austrians would take place at the Battle of Magenta on the 4th of June 1859, where the Italian corps won a major victory, almost entirely owing to the French involvement. Garibaldi and his Hunters of the Alps steered a course further north towards Lake Como and along the southern slopes of the Alps. Here he won a series of smaller battles at locations such as Varese and San Fermo in late May. These were not conclusive, but they left the Austrian northern flank exposed to a sufficient extent that the Austrians had to continue to divert troops to this region, weakening their southern lines before the Battle of Magenta. The war culminated 3 weeks later in the Battle of Solferino, one of the largest military clashes of the 19th century, and one in which the French and Sardinians emerged victorious. With this, peace negotiations were entered into. Austria agreed to cede much of its Italian territory to Sardinia, notably the central regions of the plain of Lombardy and the main prize there, the city of Milan. With this, Sardinia emerged clearly as the greatest of the domestic Italian states. Though the peninsula was still immensely divided and Italian unity was certainly not fully achieved through the war. The conflict had convinced Garibaldi, in contrast to his old ally Mazzini, that Italian unity could now be achieved, not through a popular revolution and the formation of an Italian republic, but rather through Sardinian leadership. yet he was bitterly opposed to the Treaty of Turin, which in the spring of 1860 fulfilled the terms of the Plombières Agreement 2 years earlier and granted the Duchy of Savoy and the County of Nice to the French in return for their aid against the Austrians. This was a good arrangement for King Victor Emmanuel II of Sardinia, who lost Nice and Savoy but had gained the richer and more valuable territories of Lombardy with cities like Milan. Garibaldi, however, was vehemently opposed to the transfer of his hometown Nice to France. A peculiar incident in his life around this time was also his decision in January 1860 to marry an 18-year-old girl by the name of Giuseppina Raimondi, but he immediately learned that she was pregnant with a child that was not his, and he renounced the marriage. More significant was the arrival of news in northern Italy in the late spring that a series of popular revolts had broken out in the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, specifically in the Sicilian cities of Palermo and Messina, against Spanish Bourbon rule there. This presented a clear opportunity in Garibaldi's mind to further the Risorgimento in a new way, very soon after the Second Italian War of Independence. Hence, he gathered together 1,000 or so of his closest followers and allies from amongst the hunters of the Alps, clothed them in the now familiar Garibaldian red shirts, and sailed for Sicily with his men on board two ships, Il Piemonte and Il Lombardo, in early May 1860. The events which followed are known today as the Expedition of the Thousand, landing on western Sicily in mid-May. Garibaldi and his 1,000 men managed to win a series of striking victories in the hills around Palermo, before laying siege to the city at the end of May. In theory, the Neapolitan and Sicilian soldiers of the Bourbon monarchy should have been able to easily dispense with Garibaldi's small army. There were well over 20,000 troops in Palermo and the wider region. However, after decades of a corrupt and heavy-handed regime, which was viewed quite rightly as a foreign power, these men largely refused to fight for the Bourbons. Many of their officers were bought off with promises of prominent positions in the new Italy once the revolt was over. Garibaldi was consequently able to seize Palermo after a few days of fighting, and then installed himself as dictator of Sicily. He intended the title in the ancient Roman sense of a military figure who becomes a dictator for a brief time during a military emergency, with the intention of relinquishing power once the emergency had passed. The rest of the summer was spent consolidating his control over the island in preparation for a campaign into the south of Italy, with Naples as the ultimate target. We get an interesting first-hand insight into Garibaldi at this time in Palermo from the pen of the young Henry Adams. Adams was the grandson of John Quincy Adams, the 6th President of the United States, and great-grandson of John Adams, one of the founding fathers and the 2nd President of the United States. Henry would go on to become a noted historian. He was in Rome in 1860 and headed for Sicily with the explicit intention of seeing or even meeting Garibaldi. On arrival in Palermo, he was invited as part of a small party of dignitaries to meet the Italian leader. Adams was struck by his approachability, noting that for a man who was then dictator of Sicily, he had no affectation or pretensions to power, welcoming his guests warmly and appearing dressed plainly in his red shirt. He noted that his warmth seemed to be what drew individuals to him, and concluded that Sicily could scarcely have been conquered as quickly as it was had it not been for the force of Garibaldi's leadership. As they left his government residence, he peered back to see Garibaldi smoking a cigar on a balcony, while below people cheered. Adams referred to him at this moment as, quote, "the very essence and genius of revolution." Garibaldi had conquered Sicily by appealing to popular opposition to the Bourbon monarchy. He would face stiffer opposition in southern Italy as the Bourbon monarch, King Francis II of the Two Sicilies, began coordinating a more resilient defense of Naples, Campania, and Apulia. Garibaldi, though, would have additional support from Sardinia, where King Victor Emmanuel II had realized that the Expedition of the Thousand had created an opportunity for him to extend his control over much of southern Italy. With Sardinian troops joining him in the south, Garibaldi crossed over the Straits of Messina and began marching north towards Naples in early September. He managed to take the city largely unopposed as Francis II gathered his forces at Gaeta and sought papal support against Garibaldi and the Sardinians. The war would climax at the Battle of Volturno, near Capua in Campania, on the 1st of October 1860. It was the largest battle that Garibaldi ever led an army into, with some 20,000 Sardinians and Italian soldiers clashing with a superior force of over 25,000 Sicilians and Neapolitans. Garibaldi won a statistical victory here, though not a definitive one. In the end, what sealed the result of the war was the steady stream of soldiers from northern Italy into Naples and the surrounding region. With the south being occupied in totality, Francis II continued to hold out at Gaeta against the Sardinians, but eventually in 1861 he accepted defeat and deposition. He retired to Rome, where he lived under papal protection for several years before heading into exile in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. A few weeks after the Battle of Volturno, there occurred one of the most critical events in the modern history of Italy. This was the encounter or meeting at Teano, near Fiesole, not far from Florence in Tuscany. The meeting was between Garibaldi and King Victor Emmanuel II. For such an important event, there is a surprising lack of detail as to what passed between the two men and what was agreed upon. The meeting took place in Tuscany, as in the immediate aftermath of the war with Austria and the Treaty of Turin with the French, Victor Emmanuel had deposed the last Grand Duke of Tuscany, Ferdinand IV, and had annexed his territories, thus leaving the Kingdom of Sardinia in control over most of northern and central Italy. At Teano, Garibaldi, who had conquered the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies and declared himself as dictator of Sicily, relinquished his position and handed over the conquered territory to Victor Emmanuel. Now the King of Sardinia was in charge of the vast majority of Italy. With this agreed upon, a series of plebiscites were organized in various parts of Italy in the final months of 1860 and into early 1861. And as the results confirmed an overwhelming support for Italian unity, a new Kingdom of Italy was declared in March 1861, with King Victor Emmanuel as its first monarch. Garibaldi had largely succeeded in uniting Italy under Sardinian rule and then forging an Italian nation out of it. While the Kingdom of Italy came into being in the spring of 1861, the Risorgimento was not fully complete. The Papal State, the large temporal polity in central Italy controlled by the papacy, had consisted for centuries of Rome, the wider Lazio region, and also further territory to the east and northeast in Marca and Umbria. In December 1860, after the meeting at Teano and the pacification of the south, Garibaldi and the Sardinians had occupied Marca and Umbria, thus linking all of Sardinia's territories in a solid chain of land. However, the French continued to make it clear that they would not tolerate the annexation of Rome, and that Pope Pius IX, who as the longest-serving pontiff in papal history, was the perennial enemy of Italian unification, would also continue to hold territory around Rome. As a result, the capital of the new Kingdom of Italy was initially Turin, though it was moved in 1865 to Florence, a symbolic move to the home of the Renaissance. The Austrians also continued to hold a large swathe of territory in the northeast, notably Mantua, Venice, the Veneto region, and further along the coast towards Dalmatia and Trieste. Consequently, while Italian unification had been achieved with the wars of 1859 and 1860, it was not yet complete. Furthermore, there were huge divisions in the new country, with the swift emergence of the divide between the more affluent north and the poor south, which has characterized Italy down to the present day. Questionable land reforms and economic policies also swiftly led to the beginning of mass emigration from Italy, the first stirrings of the Italian diaspora, which would see approximately 15 million people leave the densely populated peninsula by the time of the First World War. In the aftermath of the wars, Garibaldi was an immensely popular figure, both in Italy and abroad. An indication of this was in the fact that the Union government of President Abraham Lincoln contacted him in 1861 about the possibility of him returning to America to fight on their side against the Confederacy following the outbreak of the American Civil War. Doubtlessly, the intention was for Garibaldi to raise a volunteer force from amongst the growing Italian immigrant community in the United States. Garibaldi was enthusiastic. However, talks broke down when it became apparent that he wanted to have a senior role in commanding the entire Union Army. Instead, in 1862, he undertook a military campaign against Rome without government approval. Victor Emmanuel and his chief minister, Cavour, ordered the suppression of the effort while Garibaldi was gathering his men in southern Italy. A violent clash ensued, during which Garibaldi was wounded and then imprisoned. Although he was soon released, the incident pointed towards the divisions between the revolutionary and the government, with the king and his ministers viewing Garibaldi as someone who had been a useful pawn during the wars against Austria and the Neapolitans and Sicilians, and who was now something of a liability. They allowed him to return to retirement on Caprera, his Sardinian island home, though he would never play a part in the politics of a unified Italy, which his role in the Risorgimento ought to have allowed him to have. His popularity was immense all the same. A visit to England in 1864 had all the trappings of a state occasion, one in which crowds turned out to applaud him and during which he met the Prime Minister of the day, Lord Palmerston. For a while in the mid-1860s, it looked as though the Risorgimento would remain only partially complete, with Rome remaining in the hands of the papacy and, more importantly, Austria holding extensive territory in the north and northeast of the country, around Mantua and Venice. But events elsewhere in Europe played into the hands of the Italians. Back in 1862, a Prussian Junker, or nobleman, by the name of Otto von Bismarck, had become chief minister of Prussia in Germany. In September 1862, he had made a famous speech in which he promised to expand Prussia through iron and blood. War followed, first against Denmark in 1864, through which Prussia expanded northwards into part of the Jutland Peninsula. Then he turned his attention south on Austria, the great rival of Prussia amongst the several dozen German states. In the spring of 1866, Bismarck ratcheted up tensions with the Austrian government and at the same time began diplomatic negotiations with the Italians for an alliance should Prussia wage war on Austria. Thus, when the Austro-Prussian War began in June 1866, it also signaled the beginning of the Third Italian War of Independence, as the Italians viewed the opportunity as propitious to finally expel the Austrians from Italy while they were otherwise distracted by war with the Prussians. Despite being otherwise sidelined in the mid-1860s by the government, Garibaldi played a leading role in the Third Italian War of Independence. He gathered together tens of thousands of irregular soldiers, many of them veterans of the Hunters of the Alps from the war a half a decade earlier. With these, he began marching in the early summer of 1866 northeast towards Austria's territories there. It was a short war, as the Prussians comprehensively defeated the Austrians elsewhere. Garibaldi's focus was on the Trentino region, while the more regular Italian army marched southwards through Mantua towards Venice. He won one major Pyrrhic victory on the 21st of July at the Battle of Bezzecca, during which the Italians actually suffered more casualties but were able to force a withdrawal of the numerically inferior Austrians towards Lake Garda. As his advance continued, Garibaldi received word that the Austrians, having been roundly defeated by the Prussians, and aware that they were hugely outnumbered and outgunned in Italy, had agreed to a ceasefire. Terms whereby Austria ceded Mantua, Venice, the Veneto region, and parts of the Friuli region to Italy were included in the Treaty of Vienna in the autumn. Garibaldi made a quixotic effort to march on Rome the following year. This could not succeed while French troops remained stationed there, and Paris indicated that any such step would result in war between Italy and France. Prevented in his military endeavor, Garibaldi switched his efforts to a diplomatic initiative to have the papacy abolished. Giuseppe claimed that it constituted nothing more than a species of secret society. The initiative unsurprisingly failed. Events in 1870 led to both the completion of the Risorgimento and a strange overnight shift in Garibaldi's attitudes towards the French. Following the defeat of Austria in the Austro-Prussian War, the Prussian Chancellor Otto von Bismarck had set about engineering a war with France, eventually provoking Napoleon III into a declaration of war through a dispute over the succession to the Spanish throne. This was the final step in Bismarck's grand plan to forge a new German empire under Prussian leadership. The Franco-Prussian War began in July 1870. Swift advances were made into France by the Prussians within weeks. With the Germans pressing towards Paris, the French government was in no position to respond to an act of hostility by the Italians, and so in September 1870, the Italian government made clear its intentions to annex the city of Rome, regardless of the French troops there. After a brief military attack, the city capitulated, and Rome was annexed by Italy following a plebiscite 2 weeks later. Henceforth, the papacy was confined to control over a tiny statelet around St. Peter's Basilica, one which would become known as the Vatican City, with the Lateran Treaty of 1929. With this done, Garibaldi quickly tried to encourage Italians to throw their support behind the French. This Pauline conversion came about in early September 1870, once Napoleon III abdicated and a third French Republic was established. Suddenly, the Prussians were the oppressor and the French the liberal revolutionaries, a development which led Garibaldi to take up their cause. With that, he headed for France at 63 years of age to join the fight. Garibaldi's time in France was a very limited success from a military perspective. The Prussians were besting the French all over Eastern Europe and in mid-September had commenced a siege of Paris, one which would last 4 months and eventually end in French surrender. The loss of the eastern provinces of Alsace and Lorraine, and the establishment of a new German empire. Garibaldi's volunteer force, the Army of the Vosges, did succeed in winning one notable victory over a numerically superior force at Châtillon-sur-Seine, before leading a foray against the city of Dijon. Events overtook the effort then, and the war came to an end. In its aftermath, a revolutionary socialist government was established in the French capital. The Paris Commune would prove short-lived, yet is significant as the first example of an internationalist socialist government in modern European history, one which emerged a half a century before the Russian Revolution. Garibaldi indicated his full support for it, though he should not be viewed as an early communist. He was opposed to dispensing with the concept of private property, but was a keen advocate of egalitarianism, universal suffrage, and many other ideas which are hallmarks of Western liberal society today, yet which were seen as radical and subversive in Garibaldi's time. In any event, the Commune soon collapsed in a wave of violence in Paris. Garibaldi sat in the French Parliament for some time thereafter, elected for the Alpes-Maritimes region on the Italian border, though before long he returned to Italy and retired once again to Caprera. At Caprera in his final years, Garibaldi gave much consideration to the developing situation to the east in the Balkans. Here, the Ottoman Empire was going through a period of terminal decline, and nationalist movements had emerged amongst the Serbs, Bulgarians, Romanians, Herzegovinians, Montenegrins, and others, largely inspired by the example of the Greeks, who had won their independence from the Turks after a long war of independence in the 1820s. Garibaldi encouraged such efforts, directing his volunteers to head to the Balkans and join the guerrilla wars, which were being fought out of the Dinaric Alps against the Ottomans. He also issued a letter in 1875 addressed to the oppressed people of the region, in which he called for the Turks to be pushed back out of Europe, all the way to Brusa, a region in northwestern Anatolia. The statement was striking. He was not just calling for the Serbs, Bulgarians, Romanians, and others to have their own independent nation-state, but also for the Turks to be removed entirely from the Balkans, Istanbul included. He would live to see some of this come to fruition, when at the end of the Russo-Turkish War in 1878, several newly independent Balkan states, including Bulgaria, Serbia, and Romania, came into being. Garibaldi was too old to join the war in the Balkans when it erupted in 1877. Instead, in his last years, he was largely confined to Italy, a result of growing arthritis. He remained politically active, playing an important role in the historical left political movement in Italy in the 1870s, where he emerged as a leader of the more radical faction, calling for universal suffrage and republicanism. He also married for the third time in 1880 to Francesca Armosino, his long-term partner, with whom he had had three children by then. The wedding was interesting in that Garibaldi abjured his Catholicism prior to it and stated his growing deism and adherence to the principles of Freemasonry. By 1882, he was largely incapacitated and had his home reorientated so that he could see the sea from what would eventually become his deathbed at Caprera. He died there on the 2nd of June 1882 at 74 years of age. Despite a last wish to be cremated, he was buried after a short ceremony. In Rome, several days of mourning were held to mark the death of one of the greatest leaders of the unification of the country. Italy experienced shifting political and social fortunes in the years after Garibaldi's death. A new approach towards reconciling the left and right politically was adopted by the Prime Minister, Agostino De Pretis, from 1883 onwards, termed Trasformismo, or Transformation. The policy aimed to bring the political parties together into a centrist coalition that would prevent the rise of a radical left, socialist movement, or an abandonment of republicanism in favour of strict monarchy. It only met with limited success, and Italy's tragedy in many respects was to shift towards a more aggressive, outward-looking, and colonial approach under Prime Minister Francesco Crispi from the late 1880s onwards. This approach failed to engage in any substantive way with the appalling poverty of the country, created by an ailing agricultural sector and growing industrial urbanization. As this occurred, millions of Italians fled the grinding poverty of the nation Garibaldi had fought so hard to forge, turning the Italian diaspora into the largest national diaspora to come out of Europe in the 19th and early 20th centuries. The failure to engage with the country's systemic political problems also paved the way for the emergence of fascism in the interwar period and Italy's fateful record on the international stage in the 1930s and 1940s. Giuseppe Garibaldi's life appears like that of a fictional folk hero, a swashbuckling freedom fighter who fought in wars and revolutions throughout his life. This was further augmented by Alexander Dumas' widely read account of Garibaldi's exploits and further burnished by Garibaldi's sons, who continued to play a role in Italian and European revolutionary movements for decades to come. And yet his story is entirely true. In a long career of half a century, he fought in wars in Italy, Brazil, Uruguay, and France, and must have been one of the most travelled individuals to have ever lived in the era prior to the advent of the aeroplane. Visiting large parts of Europe and South America, as well as living for a time in New York and undertaking a bewildering tour of the Pacific and Far East in the early 1850s. He wasn't just a world traveller though, he was also the single most important individual in the history of the Risorgimento, the reunification of Italy after centuries of division and discord. Greater in essence than Mazzini, Cavour and Victor Emmanuel, he was not happy with the resulting monarchical state, but there is no doubt of his centrality to achieving it. Nevertheless, even when Italian unification was achieved, he was not content to enjoy a quiet retirement and spent the remainder of his life advocating for the independence of ethnic groups. Deeply admired by politicians and the common people alike, he was in short the prototype of the constant revolutionary, and was surely one of the most critical figures, not just in the history of Italy, but of modern Europe. What do you think of Giuseppe Garibaldi? Would he have considered some of his life's work a failure because an Italian republic did not appear, or would he have been content to see a unified Italy? seeming to take its place amongst the nations of Europe, please let us know in the comment section. And in the meantime, thank you very much for watching.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.